listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you break free from body shame, binging, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And hey, if you love the show, please take a moment to head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a rating or a review. That would be amazing, and I really appreciate your support. And if you would like to join me today, the number here is 323-203-0815. Well, I guess not really here. The number to call in is 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is eating at you, because the real problem with binge eating, any kind of emotional eating, stress eating, any kind of unhealthy, unhappy relationship with food, the real problem is not food. The real problem, of course, is what is eating at you. And that's what we're here to talk about. I'm here to help you make that connection and also work through the underlying, you know, what's going on underneath that you may not be seeing or may not want to look at. So binging is always a solution to the problem, even though it sure feels like the problem. So I just got a question. What affects body weight from Shelley? Well, a lot of things affect body weight, genetics, and of course, what you eat and how much you exercise. So how you feel about your body, rather than this being about weight loss, this is about changing your relationship with food. By the way, most people, when they change their relationship with food, they do naturally get to a healthy weight without dieting, without counting calories, carbs, or fat grams. That's what it's all about. You got other things on your mind, right? You got other things to think about other than obsessing and being preoccupied about everything that you're eating. I am here to tell you the problem is not food. Food is distracting you, comforting you. It is doing something for you. Let's figure out what that is and change that so that you can be free. I like to say I don't believe in recovery from binge eating or other eating disorders. I believe in liberation. Liberation is when you're truly free. Recovery is when you're in recovery. You think about it all the time. You're in it. You're in it. No, I don't want you to be in it. No, no. I want you to be free, liberated, living your life. That's my hope for you. Okay, so I have lots of questions, but something that I've noticed a lot is people use the word feel. They'll say like, "Well, I feel like this," and then they'll say a thought. So I want to really talk about the difference between feelings and thoughts. Feelings are, oh, you're welcome, Shelley. I'm sorry that I can't like be more specific. If you want to ask a more specific question, feel free. Just drop a comment below. How to keep feeling bad about my body, even though it's not really that bad. Yeah, why you feel bad about your body. Instagram name is cigarettes and bubblegum. That's so cute. Often when we feel bad about our body, we're focusing on that as a way to distract from feeling bad about other aspects of life. If you are focusing on, oh, I hate my thighs or my stomach or my whatever, you know, name a body part, and you want to change it, do you have this idea that if you change your body, you change your life? Because the $60 billion diet industry, yes, $60 billion diet industry, billion, did I mention billion with a B? That's a lot of freaking money. They are invested in you feeling bad about your body. So you feel bad about your stomach. So you feel bad about your body or your stomach while still feeling good about yourself overall. So look at why you're focused on your stomach, how much you're focused on your stomach, or for anyone else who can relate to this question, what does focusing on your stomach keep you from looking at? Because the $60 billion diet industry is based on, predicated on us feeling bad about our bodies. And then they sell us the idea that if we like our bodies and we feel good about ourselves, our stomachs or other body parts or whatever, our weight, then we're going to have the lives we want. Like if we have great abs, suddenly everything in our lives is going to be a lot better. They sell us this notion that if you change your weight, your life will change. And story is changed. Unfortunately, it's like when you change your weight, you change your weight, and that's about it. And maybe you feel good for a while, but then you still have the same issues. You still have the same problems. You still have the same relationship stuff. You still have the same, you know, holes in your life or conflicts or whatever. Your life doesn't magically get great just because you've got a six pack or an eight pack or a 12 pack or whatever it is. So one thing that you can think about, cigarettes and bubble gums. I just love that Instagram name. That's so cute. If you want to leave your name, I'll call you by your actual name. One thing that can help is that we tend to focus on what we're, you know, we tend to think about what we're focusing on. So if you look in the mirror and every time you look in the mirror, you're just like, oh, my stomach, then that's all you see. And so you really have to retrain your mind to look at yourself more in totality. I guarantee you, if you look at yourself, you're going to find something else you like. Like, you may not like your stomach, but maybe you really like your arms or your legs or your face or your eyes, or you have great hair or you have a great smile or something. And the more that you focus on that, which Raina, I can't see. Gotta put on my glasses. It's come to this. Rana. Okay. I hope I'm saying that right. Rana? The more that you focus on the qualities about yourself that you like, the better you're gonna feel, and the less the stomach that you don't like is going to take. And also, if you are feeling bad about your stomach, then you're feeling bad about yourself. And it is impossible to feel bad about yourself and also encourage yourself. And if we feel bad about ourselves, then what happens? We feel bad. We feel discouraged. We feel sad. We feel upset. And then since we can't simultaneously make ourselves feel bad and make ourselves feel good, what happens? We might end up turning to food to comfort ourselves or to silence that critic. So I really recommend that, I'm not saying, Rana, that you should just accept your stomach. If you don't like your stomach, you don't like your stomach. I'm not all for, like, if you're a body positivity person who can say, hey, I accept my body as it is. Hey, good for you. Awesome. Love it. But if you're not a body positivity person who can't look in the mirror and say, I accept my stomach, don't feel bad for not being able to do that. Instead, say, you know what? I don't love my stomach, but I'm not gonna focus on that. Maybe I'll try to change my stomach and do some sit-ups or whatever, some ab work. But I'm gonna focus on what else about my appearance that I do like and do appreciate. Let's focus on what it is you like, not what it is you don't like. Hopefully that makes sense. And, you know, we see the evidence we look for. If we have a narrative that says, oh, my stomach is just way too big, or I hate my stomach, then all you're going to see is your stomach. If you have a narrative that says, you know what, overall, I feel good about myself. Yeah, my stomach is not what I want it to be, but okay. Overall, right? So let's change the lens through which you are seeing yourself. Look for what you like instead of what you don't like. That really does help. And I will say, practice makes progress. You're not going to just right away look in the mirror and go, oh, I really love this or this or this. It's going to take a while for you to believe it. But the more you do it, the better you are going to feel. I promise you. I promise you. Just, hey, I like this. I like this. I look good. And the other thing I would say is it's really important if you don't like a part of your body, wear clothes that fit. This is such a practical thing to say from a psychoanalyst, but I'm going to say it anyway. Close this, because you're going to feel uncomfortable and it's going to make you all the more aware of, say, your stomach or whatever it is that you don't like. When you wear clothes that fit, you feel comfortable. When you feel comfortable, you're not constantly focused on the part of your body that you don't like. So those are two things that you can do, two strategies that are practical. And then from a psychological standpoint, what is focusing on your stomach taking you away from? I remember my very first group for women struggling with binge eating disorder. Yes, this was the group. If you have been following me for a while, you know the story of this is the group that my first day, the one woman looked me up and down and said, "So what does a skinny bitch like you know about binging?" That same group. Someone asked, "No, it's not taking me away from anything. Nothing's eating at me. This is really all about my weight. If I could just lose 20 pounds, you know, I'd feel better about myself in all of these, you know, 10 different ways." And she kept saying it was about the weight. It was about the weight. And I'd say, "No, something is weighing on you." And she'd say, no, it's all about the weight." And then the very last day of the group, she said, "Well, if she wasn't thinking about those 20 pounds, she weren't thinking about that, she was not thinking about that, she imagined that she'd want to leave her husband." So you see that focusing on that 20 pounds for her kept her from focusing on what was weighing on her. In her case, it was a great dissatisfaction in her relationship, in her marriage, and she wanted to leave her husband. She felt looking about her husband. So ask yourself, hey, if I were not thinking about this, my weight, my stomach, weight, whatever, what would be on my mind? That's a scary question, right? Because eating can protect us from thinking thoughts we don't want to think and feeling feelings we don't want to feel. And so to ask yourself, well, what is eating or focusing on food or focusing on weight protecting me from is really challenging. But I encourage you to have the courage to ask yourself that question. Like, get to the root of why you're focusing so much on your weight, on your body, on whatever, or beating yourself up. If you weren't turning against yourself and your body, what would be disappointing you? Who or what would be too much? Who or what would be making you upset? Scary question to ask, but so important. Vital. Okay, so let's talk about thinking away your feelings. Now, what do I mean by that? So let me tell you about Jasmine, not her real name. So Jasmine had, she had this horrible boss. Like, think, if you guys ever saw The Devil Wears Prada, Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, she was like a dream boss compared to Jasmine's boss. Jasmine's boss was insulting, dismissive, unreasonable, contemptuous, just horrible. So Jasmine came in, this was back in the day when people actually came into my office. Oh, those days, 2 years it's been, I can't even believe it. Anyway, now she would come into a Zoom room. But anyway, I digress. So Jasmine said, I have a confession to make. A confession. And she said that she had binged all day the day before. And she was very upset with herself. She was disgusted with her weight. She felt like a failure. These are all her words. And she said she just couldn't do anything right. So I thought Jasmine was talking about herself in a very similar way to the way Jasmine's boss talked to her, insulting, just plain mean, just not nice, rude. And it seemed like Jasmine was taking the anger she felt towards her boss herself. And then she said, so what? Okay. So I get it. Like I'm turning on myself. I really want to yell at my boss, but instead I'm yelling at myself. So, okay. I can't yell at my boss. I can't be mad at my boss. So how's that going to help me? And now she was being very logical, going into her head. And I often say it is not logical. It is psychological, this work. So I told her, you know, the way you talk to yourself affects the way you feel, and the way you feel affects how you eat. If you are self-critical, you will feel terrible. And when you feel terrible, you're more likely to binge for comfort or distraction, which of course then feeds, pardon the expression, feeds the self-judgment, the self-criticism, and the cycle goes on and on and on. So to stop the cycle, you really need to change the way. Jasmine really needed to express her feelings about her boss so she wouldn't turn them on herself. And when I say she needed to express those feelings, by the way, I don't mean talk to her boss. Yeah, that would get her fired really fast. I meant letting her feelings out with me, in a journal, at home, with friends, so she wouldn't turn them against herself, or she wouldn't stuff them, literally and figuratively. So in other words, when you get the feelings out, you don't need food to cope. Makes sense, right? Not to Jasmine. No, she said, what is the point of expressing my feelings? What is the point of talking about my feelings? It won't change anything. My boss is going to be the same. What's the deal? So she was still staying in her head, right? So she had the boss from hell. That boss was not going to change. That boss was never going to change. Like Jasmine, we have all encountered people and situations that we can't change, but we can change how we feel about those situations. So how do we do that? By identifying our feelings and working through them. And what do I mean by working through them? Feeling them. So this is the example that I like to use. It's a little morbid, but I think it really makes the point. You have probably at some point in your life experienced loss. The death of someone you know, right? I don't mean like losing a friendship. I mean losing a person who dies. So when a person dies, you don't say, well, there's nothing I do. Of course not. So whether you sit Shiva or attend a wake or mourn in some other way, there are rituals that help you grieve the person you lost. You cry, you feel a terrible loss and emptiness, and then when you have felt your feelings, eventually you feel better. The person you lost lives on in your memory and in your thoughts, but the intensity of that loss diminishes. So the situation hasn't changed, but it doesn't hurt as much. Okay, so morbid example over. I think you get the point. It's the same principle for all feelings. For all feelings. So then, you know, Jasmine said, well, you know, the way things are right now, like a lot of people can't get work anyway. A lot of people would be happy to complain about my boss. Like, it's not that bad. Okay, so again, Jasmine was trying to think away her feelings by comparing her situation to people who have it worse. So if you break your arm snowboarding and your best friend breaks a leg snowboarding, does that make your broken arm less painful? No, it does not. If your house is flooded and you need to redo all your flooring, but your neighbor's house goes up in flames and burns to the ground, do you have less of a right to be upset? No, you do not. If you want to lose 50 pounds and your friend needs to lose 150, are you not allowed to have feelings about your weight because you have less to lose? No, 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 and no again. Look, we can all be thankful that we're not in Africa with an epidemic that are going on in the world. But what is happening in other parts of the world is tragic, but those situations don't take away our right to have feelings about our problems and the issues that affect our lives. So Jasmine had a hard time being mad at her boss, but she had no problem being mad at herself for eating this or that or weighing this or that. So binging did two things for her. Remember earlier I said that binging is not the problem. It is the solution to the problem, but it's just a solution that ends up hurting more than it hurts. It's a frenemy. It does something for you, but it also hurts you. So binging did two things for just avoid anger at her. It did comfort and distraction from her feelings. But it also gave her a reason to direct that anger, because that anger doesn't go anywhere. If you're mad at someone, you can't think it away. You can't positive think it away. You can't drop it. You can't stuff it down. You can't do anything but actually express it. And since she wasn't expressing it about her boss, she was turning that on to herself. So instead of saying, my boss is out of control and absolutely horrible, I am so upset about the way I am being treated, instead of saying that, she said, oh, see how out of control I am with food? I am so mad at myself for eating so much. So if you dismiss or minimize your feelings, they don't just go away. They often get redirected towards yourself or so you might be wondering why Jasmine had such a hard time being upset at her terrible boss. And now this is where things get interesting. You know, I'm a detective of the mind. That's how I think of myself. I am a detective of the mind. So we did some detective work. And as is often the case, the answer to what was going on in the present was found in the past. So check this out. Jasmine's parents worked really long hours, and she spent most afternoons with her grandfather, who was a rageaholic, an out of control, sound familiar already? Out of control rageaholic. He didn't get frustrated or irritated or upset. Oh no, he got furious. He expressed himself by yelling, finger pointing, name calling, sarcasm, even throwing things. So Jasmine grew up equating anger with being out of control. So on some level, she was afraid that if she got angry with someone else, she would be just as bad, just as threatening, just as scary a person as her grandfather. And her parents never showed much emotion. They were always away working. So she had no model for expressing anger in an appropriate way. So when we talk about how her experience with her grandfather had influenced her ability to express those angry feelings, we started talking about that. Jasmine gave another intellectual thinking response. She said, in a very matter-of-fact way, she said, well, I guess I can see how a person would have resentment toward her father. Like, I can see how a person would be affected like that. Yeah, I get it. Which is pretty much verbatim how she said it, and that's how she said it. So again, she was in her head, not in her heart. She talked about how a person would have resentment towards a grandfather like that, instead of how she felt about her grandfather, whose anger terrified her. So Jasmine was eventually able to express how she felt about her grandfather, and she expressed how she felt about her boss. Yay her. She got mad. She got outraged. She got incensed. She let loose with some very creative swear words. It was impressive, actually. She strung some things together I had never heard before. She got out all her anger, and when she did that, stopped being so hard. So if you find yourself saying things like, well, what's the point of talking about it? It won't change anything. Or other people have it so much worse than I do. I have no right to complain. If you talk about how Well, people might feel in your situation rather than how you feel in your situation. You might be too much in your head and not enough in your heart. And you might be turning against yourself rather than expressing yourself. So whether you're trying to think away your anger like Jasmine, or whether other feelings like sadness, helplessness, anxiety, fear, guilt, worry, shame, whatever it is that is going on with you, those emotions need your attention, not your condemnation. And when you think less and feel more, you sleep or distraction. When you get out of your head, you will get out of the fridge. So that's just a little explanation about how some of the ways we think can really cut us off from ourselves and make us turn to food for comfort. If you have any questions, if you would like to talk with me, the call-in number is 323-203-0815. Again, 323-203-0815. I would love to hear from you. And if you're on Instagram, feel free to drop a comment. Do I see one? I cannot. If you have a comment just on Instagram, just feel free to oh, thank you for the compliment. Just feel free to drop it in the comments in it. Written in, my team has compiled a rather long list of questions that people have. So, what are some tips to avoid binging before bed? Okay, so binging before bed. We're really talking about nighttime eating. Oh my God, my dog is up. Seriously, this is what happens when you do your show live. I'll be right back. Live at home, letting the dog out. Come on. I'll be right there. And when a 165-pound Great Dane wants to leave, you let him out of your office. Okay. So what are some tips to avoid binge eating at night? Really, when we talk about binge eating at night, we are talking about nighttime eating. Here's why. During the day, we are often busy. We're doing things. We're busy. We've got work. We've got kids. We got stuff around the house. We're doing this or that, and we're constantly occupied, and our minds are busy. When that is over and it's nighttime, that's when some feelings might become available to us. Some thoughts that we don't want to think might become available to us. We might start thinking the things that we don't want to think. We might start feeling the feelings that we don't want to feel. And so binging, remember I said it was a frenemy, it helps you in some way. It also hurts you. So how is it a friend? It distracts you from uncomfortable thoughts and feelings. It distracts you from something that you don't want to be with. It also can in physical pain. If you eat so much it hurts, maybe you're turning emotional pain to physical pain. If you are eating just to fill a void, you know, want to look at, well, what is that void? That void is often very much in evidence during the night. In the daytime, and you're busy, you're not noticing certain states. But at night, you can start feeling lonely. You're not distracted by everything that you're doing. So at night is the danger time, because that's when you are with you. And if you can't be with you, because so many of us don't know how to be with ourselves, we attack ourselves. We find fault with ourselves. We feel empty. We feel lonely. We don't feel good enough. We feel like something's wrong, but we don't really know how to look at that. We might be with a significant other who we have a conflict with, or the relationship is unsatisfying, or we have nobody there and we really desperately wish for someone to be there with us and for us. And if you don't know how to be with yourself, that feels unbearable. absolutely unbearable. And food takes the edge off. Food fills us when we're lonely. Remember, food represents on some level relationship. Our first experience of being fed is connected with relationship. We're held in a parent's arms, right? We're held, we're cradled, we have eye contact, we feel safe. I'm assuming that most people have this experience. I know not every day. First part, safe and connected, and the experience of being with another person is related to the experience of being fed. So in our psyche, food equals relationship. Food equals people. People can be unavailable, unreliable, and unpredictable. So we may want to avoid people, or when we're with people, we put on like the nice show. Oh, hi, how are you? Let's make it all about you. Lots of people do that. Like they go out with people and it's an effort, and it's all about the other person, and it's draining because they dare not make it about themselves. So you go out with, you spend time with other people, but you don't really get anything back. Food is available, reliable, and predictable. Food is safe. And they're turning to food. Maybe you're mad at your boss like Jasmine was, but you don't want to go there. You don't want to think about it, because then if you think about being mad at your boss, maybe you tell yourself you need to get a new job, and that's just too scary. So better not to be mad at your boss. Better to be mad at yourself, because, oh my God, I hate my stomach. So nighttime is when you are alone with yourself. And if you don't know how to be alone with yourself, it is a scary time in which, you know, food takes you away from your mean, critical, judgmental, scared voice or anxious voice or whatever it is that's hard to be with. So what's the solution? To first identify what it is you don't want to be with. Express that. A lot of people think it's that identifying it is the same as expressing. So expressing it. Many a person has said to me, well, yes, I realized why I was eating. I was mad. I was mad. Well, that's identifying it. Expressing anger is, I was mad, and here's why. Ugh, this really pissed me off. This person did this to me, and it really upset me. And that person, I have so much resentment towards that person, and ugh, right? That's feeling the anger, expressing it. But wait, there's a third part. So first you identify it, but you don't stop with identifying it. You express it. You say what is upsetting, just like Jasmine did with her boss. And you could be as creative with swear words as she was. Any way you have to express it, get it out, attacking yourself. So you identify the feeling, you express it with words and affect. What I mean by affect is energy. Saying, well, I'm sad is a lot different than crying, for example. Crying is not the only way that we show that we're sad, but that's what I mean by affect. If you say you're sad, you kind of feel it in your, like, feelings. Why are they called feelings? We feel them in our bodies. Thinking you're sad is different than feeling sad. Thinking anger is different from feeling anger. If you're anxious, you might be using food at night to, like, sedate yourself. Often people will eat, especially super carby things, when they're anxious, to just kind of calm themselves down. So the answer to that would be, you know, food. Challenge your thinking, but also find ways of calming your body so that you're not calming your body by eating. So then the last step is to respond to yourself. And this is the part where everybody has the most problem with. When it comes to themselves, like, they can respond to other people just fine. And tell me if this resonates with you. If when someone else is upset, you can say, oh, I totally get it. Of course you feel that way. Yeah, I'm there with you. I'm here if you need anything. Totally understand. Let me give you a hug. Like, are you that person? And if so, where's that voice for you? Where's that voice for you? That's what I'm curious about. We don't respond to ourselves in a way that is reassuring and encouraging and supportive. Identify your feeling, and then you express it. And you still feel, ooh, that's because you're not then responding to yourself and reassuring yourself. And reassurance sounds like, here's my VERY acronym. You know, I love making up acronyms. VERY, validating, acknowledging, and reassuring yourself. So if we take Jasmine's situation as an example, yeah, you got a terrible boss. Of course you're mad. Absolutely, you're furious. How could you not be? And that's acknowledgement and reassuring, and then acknowledgement and validating, and then reassuring is, but you know what? I'm gonna figure out some strategies to change. I'm not gonna let it get to me because I'm gonna really then maybe I'll get a new job. Hi, Josh. Good to.
Hi, Dr. Nina. How are you?
I am well. Hold on. I'm trying to make your volume a little higher. Can you say something?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Your voice is a little low, but I can hear you.
Okay, maybe it's me. I'm not sure.
What's going on, Josh?
Not much. Just wanted to call in and say hi to you. It's been a little couple weeks, maybe a few weeks, maybe a month. I don't know. But I really like your show. I was listening on Instagram, even though I wasn't saying anything. And I'm the kind of person who wants to get at the root of the issue. And I feel like it has to have something to do with breath. And I was wondering if you could say anything about that.
It can have its roots in an early experience of feeding. And the earlier psychoanalysts like Melanie Klein thought everything happened because of that stage of life. But as we have evolved in psychoanalytic theory, we see that there are many different things that affect people's development with themselves. So what you're talking about is sort of a drive theory, instinctual drive theory, as we've evolved in the way that I think, it is more about people's real lived relationships with other people. But the reason that we turn to food for comfort is because we eat food.
Can I say something? I mean, I was about 2 hours ago, I was literally reading Melanie Klein talking about the breast feeding. So you are like really on point today.
Well, I do have a degree from I do have a doctorate, and I am a psychoanalyst, and I do know my Melanie Klein, but I do not. She was still very, even though she's called object relations. She's really not. She's really sort of a neo-Freudian. And that.
So who is the object relations person?
There are many, but I'd read Harry Guntrip, Fairbairn. I mean, why don't you DM me and I'll give you some people to read. But,
I guess I'm wrong.
No, you're completely wrong. That's completely wrong. No. In fact, there are some Kleinians, but contemporary psychoanalysis is not Kleinian at all. So for those of you who don't know what the heck we're talking about, let me say that what Josh is, and Josh, maybe, you know, I'm happy to talk with you about that separately, but that our actual real lived experiences affect the way that we perceive ourselves, and our actual real lived experiences then can become internalized. As an example, I've talked about this before when I was at the park with my daughter and the little kid started crying, and I won't give the whole setup. I'll just say it really briefly because we're we don't have all that much time, but kids started crying and running up to cry, don't cry. So right now, kids learning, ooh, if I cry, I'm going to make other people anxious. Don't cry, don't cry. Mom's like digging in her diaper bag, looking all frantic. And she pulls out a cookie and she says, don't cry, have a cookie. And I was just cringing. It took everything I had not to say something. But my point in telling the story is that girl is going to grow up to become a woman who, when she is upset, is going to tell herself, oh, get anxious. Don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. Where's the cookie? That we internalize our actual real lived experiences. So what goes from being interpersonal, you know, child and mother, becomes internal, different parts of ourselves.
Do you think it's possible that because the breast is attached to the mother, that actually food isn't food, it's actually the mother? And then the idea would be, since it's obviously not the mother, we have our own relationship with our mother. Is the relationship with the mother tied up a lot really, really closely with food? In other words, if we're angry with our mother, we might turn away from food. And if we were really attached to our mother, say, we would be really attached to food. Is that possible?
Well, in broad strokes, I mean, people who have, and it's not, and you know, even though the oldest psychoanalytic joke in the world is, if it's not one thing, it's your mother, ba-dum-bum. Fathers also have, and fathers and siblings and aunts and uncles and grandparents and teachers all have a huge influence on, not always parents are, our development. But because food is relationship, that if you have an intrusive parent, some people turn away from relationships. They turn away from food as if keeping food out. You know, people can't have said often, I don't want to have food in my mouth, like as if it's an intrusion. So I also want to say that everyone is an individual. And one of the questions I get asked a lot is, well, you know, what's it like to treat eating disorders? And I say, I don't treat eating disorders. I treat people who develop eating disorders for reasons that are as unique as they are. And what may pertain to one person does not to another. And that's why it's so important to look at not an us, but an individual.
Right. If the child turned on the mother,
unfortunately, we are out of time. I can't talk about the Oedipal dynamic, but I'm happy to talk about that with you separately. If you want to DM me, we can have a little conversation about that. But unfortunately, we are out of time. That is, and you're using very old, archaic, like sort of Freudian, you know, old psychoanalysis. That's not really the way people think now. So it gets to be very theory driven. I mean, some people think it, and it has its part, but it's very theory driven. And my point is, I don't want to be theory driven. I want to be individual driven. So for one person can have an issue that another person doesn't. And that's why there's no all people. There's not all boys, all girls, all non-binaries. There's just each individual and each person. Each person comes to their own complex relationship with self and with food for reasons that are, as I said, as individual as they are. But thank you for always bringing up some lofty, complex questions. I appreciate your input, and thanks for bringing us to the end of the show. That is it for the Dr. Nina Show today. I am here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. You can also listen later or watch later on Apple Podcasts. Just look for the Dr. Nina Show on Apple Podcasts. No, the actual name of it is the Dr. Nina Show on LA Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts. Please, again, if you can, it means so much to me, because the more reviews and ratings that I get, the more it shows up in searches and the more people that we, because this is a collaborative effort, right? The more people that we can help. Have a wonderful day. Stay curious, not critical, and I will see you next week. Bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.